Welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the midweek show from the Bagel Tech Network, the meaty show that talks about all things that have happened in technology in the previous week, since the last time we were here talking about all the things that have happened in the previous week. I'm joined by a new panel to a certain degree. Top left, we've got Mr. Mike Hurley from the Podcasting Project. How's your week? Well, I haven't seen you for about a month, mate. What's been happening?
Well, we bumped into each other in real life.
At Elmuk, yes.
But I was on holiday, and a holiday, when you do 4 or 5 podcasts, it really sets you back when you have to try and catch up with that stuff. As you, I'm sure, well, I don't think you take holidays, do you, Ian?
No, I've never had a holiday.
Don't have one.
What impressed me was, like, normally when you meet someone that you've only seen on audio visual, you always say something like, you know, you're tall in real life. Most people say you're not as fat as you look, but you didn't, so thanks, mate.
You are more beautiful.
Oh.
How about that?
You should wear your glasses more, mate. They make you look like Joe 90.
I can't wear them with these headphones. They dig into the side of my head. For anybody that wants to see me with my glasses, there you go.
It's Joe 90 with face fuzz.
But then also I get that beautiful glare. Do you see that glare?
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that, mate. Bit of reflector off the desk, that'll solve that. Next to him, we've got a new additional to the Bagel Tech family, Mr. Barry Collins from PC Pro Magazine.
Hello.
Hello, mate. We met at the Elmuk thing as well, didn't we?
We did. It was all right, Gavin.
Well, you had the worst of the job because you had the bloody projector shining in your face most of the night, and then you were sat next to that arse. Sorry if you're watching, Alex.
Oh, and I had to defend PCs in front of a Mac audience, which was on a hide into nothing.
You did a good job, Barry.
You did, mate. I was on your side as well, though, pal. They shouldn't have done that to you. How's PC Pro's new look going?
It's going very well, yeah. We get some good sales off the new magazine, so all good.
Have you had any good feedback as well?
Yeah, plenty of good feedback. We're really, really happy, actually. It went to our subscribers a week early off the stand, and lots of good feedback from them. So, yeah, all going well.
Normally that kind of change management doesn't go well, does it? It's like, you know, if you've got a loyal following, they hate to see a change.
Yeah, there's always some people who don't like the change, and we really changed the order of the entire magazine as well, so it shook up a lot of people. So there's some things we're tweaking for the second issue, which we put to bed about midnight last night, but it's all going well.
Excellent, mate. Jolly good. Below him, we've got Sarah Gray, our sysadmin. How you doing, missus?
I'm very well, thank you, Ewan.
You're going to provide us with some inside information on one of the stories this week, I hope.
I'll do my best.
No, I think Sarah's Skype feed may mysteriously disappear when we get to that story. And last but by no means least, from sunny California and from under his bedclothes, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, Ewan.
What's been happening, mate? Pretty easy week. Chilling out,
yeah,
a few beers.
Yeah, no tech talk back this week. There's new studio transitions going on, and so they have a lot to work out before even I can get in. So I just kind of took this week off.
As long as there's no beer tins or pizza cartons in your bed with you, then you haven't gone too far. You know that.
Well, that's good.
Good man. Excellent. The week in technology has been fairly quiet again, as usual, unless you're Apple. We've got a Trojan asteroid that's circling the Earth, and it's the first one, apparently. And apparently, Trojan asteroids are the reason that Pluto lost its planetary status. So I don't know what's going to us. We might be a planet in the morning. But there you go. We're not going to collide with it, so don't worry. We've also got PC prices for local government and for national government here in the UK have come under a bit of fire. There's lots of stories being bandied about and lots of prices being thrown around. And we've got Barry, who's going to give us the inside track on it, as well as. And apparently, some of the reporting's been a bit high. Then we've got the news bins thing, which has happened in the last couple of days, where BT have been told they've got to block news bins, news group site. And finally, Japanese quarterly results were out. Samsung did pretty well, 300% growth in the smartphone market. Well done to them. And apart from that, really, most of everyone else in Japan suffered pretty badly. So it's a bad day. Where should we start? PC prices in national government? Or is that a bit boring?
Let's get it out of the way.
Right. Apparently, according to the story on BBC website, there was a whole pile of tech information and equipment and system support and that kind of stuff that's being sold to local government and national government, and the prices are more than vastly inflated. They're rip-off Britain by a long, long way. There was prices of £3,500 for a single PC and things like that being talked, but just before we started, Barry said that's all bunkum.
Yeah, it is nonsense, because what they're doing is extrapolating figures. So the £3,500 figure is actually the entire cost of support supporting one employee with one desktop. So it includes things like the software licenses, it includes installation, it includes support and warranty cover. It supports the entire legal bunkum that you have to do with any kind of public sector rollout. So this idea, in fact, the Daily Mail wrote a story today saying they're paying 3,500 quid for a PC, whereas you can go down to Dixon's and buy one for £250. Look at the money they're wasting. And yes, they may well be wasting money, but it's certainly nowhere near the scale that it's been reported. And the idea of an IT manager from the Cabinet Office going down to Dixon's and buying a 250 quid PC for, you know, his 2,000 employees is just absolutely laughable.
I mean, that smacks of reporting based on the fact that you read someone else's report. I mean, the BBC did a large spread as well as the Daily Mail today. Did any of them actually get it right?
Well, they keep saying for a single desktop PC, it's not just a PC. No one pays 3,500 quid for a PC. I'd like to see you try. I mean, actually, a quick plug, we're doing a thing in the magazine this month with ridiculous PCs, but even those, they're like £3,000. The most ridiculous PCs you can buy are £3,000 or £4,000. The average desktop on the Cabinet Office desk is not going to cost £3,500 for the hardware alone. The whole package costs £3,500.
They were saying on the report I heard on the BBC this morning that the reason why this was happening was because of the fact that when PCs were procured, the company that they were buying from would load it up because the people that were procuring them didn't know what they were talking about. So they were being hoodwinked. So they say, oh, how about this? How about that? And people would just say yes, apparently, which says more about the people that are doing it, if it's true, than the equipment costs.
Eric, is IT purchasing in US government under fire as well, or is it? Or is there a perception that they're more savvy over in your neck of the woods?
You know, I don't think there's been any big single story lately. I think people just generally assume that the government overpays, as they do for pretty much everything that is a contracted type of thing. Especially in, I mean, defense must spend 10, 20, 30 times what a normal person would pay for computers. That's just the way it goes, and no one really has the ability to check in and see what they're actually paying.
Well, the US Defense Department buys PlayStation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Most of their cryptography systems.
Oh, for the troops?
No, most of the... Yeah, right. Most of their cryptography systems are run using the GPUs off PlayStation.
Oh, really?
It's super duper powerful.
Yeah.
I can't remember what that chip name is called. It's a ridiculously powerful chip inside the PlayStation.
Mm. Would that be the cell processor?
That's the one. Well done, sir.
Did you get from the chat room?
No, I just remembered that. In fact, if you asked me what's in the PlayStation 3, I couldn't tell you, but I know that the cell was at least in the PS2.
Yeah, apparently there's something like the gaming capability. The PS3 has only been tapped to something like 60% of its total capability so far.
Interesting.
That's neither here nor there, really, though, is it? Barry, if you go back to government again in the UK, I mean, there was a story that was bandied around about a year ago, I think, where the NHS had ordered a computer management system for records and that kind of stuff. And the government were paying something like £30,000 a month for the legal fees associated with the dispute with the firm that was writing the software. Yeah. I mean, this thing's not particularly new either, but is it the holistic process? It's the software systems that the government's buying and the hardware, or is it pretty much just hardware only? Are you still there, Barry? No, Barry's frozen. Connection lost. Huzzah!
So it happens when you use a PC.
No, he's on a MacBook Air, I think.
Then I retract that statement and say it must be something with his internet connection and nothing with his computer.
He's obviously got the cheap one from Dixon's at 220 quid rather than the one that's sourced through local government suppliers, you see, at £3,500. At least you don't drop connection, do you, Sarah?
Yes. Personally, no, but not now.
But your company does.
It's been known that we've had internet issues. Unlike anybody else.
Here we go. He's back. I didn't think it was that difficult a question, Barry.
I think the spook has got me. MI5 must be listening.
MI5, you were about to slag someone off.
GCHQ, isn't it?
Yeah, we were talking about NHS records and the fact that they're spending £30,000 a month fending off the liable cases and the legal cases associated with that. I mean, is this just one of those holistic perennial problems that continues to go on and on and on? Or is there an end in sight for local government spending on IT?
Only when they run out of budget. I think always in public sector, there's huge amounts of money wasted. And if you look at the big IT firms and the services companies, they've got huge teams devoted to public sector because they know there's money to be made in there. It's one of the few areas left, in fact, education and public sector, where has kept a number of firms going over the last year or two, especially. So yes, I think they always see it as a bit of a cash cow to be milked.
So you've been saying that you've been running this story for quite a while now. Where seems to be the biggest issues?
Well, I mean, last year there was a report from Sir Philip Green where he came out. He basically, the Cabinet Office told him to go and look at government spending, and he did this sort of massive wide-ranging report covering everything from the sort of tissue paper they use in the toilets at number 10 to printers and computers in various government departments. And he produced this ridiculous report saying, look, some departments are spending £2,000 on laptops and others are spending £250. And what a ridiculous waste of money. Why aren't they all buying £250 computers, as if a £250 computer is exactly the same as a £2,000 computer and they perform the same job? So we sent in a Freedom of Information request to the Cabinet Office to try and get the exact data, what he was comparing, because they wouldn't release it to us. And they refused. They just refused to give us the data. They said, oh, it'll breach confidentiality, you know. So we appealed to the Information Commissioner. And just last week, in fact, they said that the Cabinet Office had no right to withhold that information and had to send it to us, and gave them 35 days to send it to us because they breached the Freedom of Information Act.
So you're popular at the moment then?
Yeah, this is why my line
probably was GCHQ then cutting you off.
That is some pure journalism coming from PC Pro.
What, just actually writing a letter and then appealing against it?
Yeah
it is.
Really, really want that.
That's because the rest of us would walk away and go, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and yeah. That's what they hope. And it's taken 8 months to get this far. We still haven't got it.
So is there a next process where you appeal against the appeal?
Well, they've got about another 28 days to hand it over. And in after that, it's basically down to whoever the ICO prosecutes, the Cabinet Office. So I'm not holding my breath. But I mean, the Cabinet Office have promised to send it to us, but I'm pretty sure they're going to take 34, 35 days to send it to us.
Yeah.
Status point. Eric, have you got a freedom of information process? We've basically got this thing where if you write in and say, I want to know the inside leg measurement of the councillors, they're supposed to do it.
We do. We have a freedom of information. I think it might be called the Freedom of Information Act. I don't know when it was passed or whatever, but I think that is actually the way that, if I recall, the first private contract relating to the iOS App Store became revealed to the public was because one of those organizations like EFF or someone did a Freedom of Information request to NASA, who had published an app on Apple's iTunes for the iPhone. And because of that, they were able to obtain the private contract that Apple didn't show to anybody before that. So yes, we do have that, and activist groups use it quite a lot.
Has anyone made requests over IT purchase prices and so on with local government and national government in the US, or is it just not on the radar?
I don't think it's on the radar. I think we're too concerned about all the money that goes into the major wars. The IT is like the last little percentage.
The one thing that actually tickled me in the stories that were bandied around today, and again, Barry, come in if you've got any more information on this, was they were talking about government as a whole, including local and national government, could save a total of £700 million, and the NHS itself could save around £700 million, like it was actually a large amount of money in global terms. And if you look at the global spend of the NHS, I think it's something like £38 billion or £40 billion per year. It's actually a fair drop in the ocean.
Yeah, and these figures are massively inflated, which is why we want to get those figures in the Green Report, because he was making these wide sweeping statements like they could save £66 million on printer cartridges, but by again comparing what is a 300 £300 print cartridge to a one that was booked for £25, is if they're both going to be printing exactly the same. And the £300 one is probably better value than the £25 one, because it would, you know, it'll run for much longer. So yeah, if they don't have sensible people looking at this and making rational judgments, then more money could get wasted, because the entire edict will go out, well, you can only buy the £25 ink cartridge that only lasts 50 sheets. And they waste more money because they put... I've got to be careful what I say, but they, you know, they put people who run knicker shops and Topshop in charge of deciding government IT spending priorities.
Well, the problem it's the headline making, isn't it? That's what's, it's the sensationalism.
Yeah.
Without actually having the storyline behind it. But hey, we're used to that. So,
comment in the chat room from Tone saying, remember the one about Leicester Council and purchasing iPads? I think they spent about £40,000. And wasn't the issue over the BBC spending something like £40,000 on iPads at a single swoop for a few people? The other one I was going to say was, I've got a friend who works in facilities management, and he was telling me when he got a job at a hospital down south that he went in and they said, oh, you know, we'd get these hinges. These hinges are £800 a piece for this door. And he said, oh, are you kidding me? I can get those for £25. And they said, yeah, but can you get one that's going to do 1 million swings in the next 2 weeks? And it, well, no, okay, fair point. You know, the level of abuse and attack and misuse that is going to be used in public service is something that's vastly underestimated as well in local government spending and so on. So good story. Anyway, news bins. Here in the UK, Eric, Newsbins is, I'm sure you're aware of the site and Newsbin too, but there's been a court ruling today that British Telecom, who are the largest ISP provider here in the UK, have been told that they had to actively block the Newsbin site. They weren't allowed to let people have access to it, and they've said that they're not going to appeal against the court ruling. They're going to go along with it, but it's not actually going to happen until October, probably. What do we think about that one? Good? Bad?
I think it's terrible.
I think it's very interesting.
Well, certainly bad, I think. It's probably the first instance of a court-mandated website block at the ISP level.
Yeah, I think there's been talk about it in the US, but you haven't actually followed through with it yet, have you?
I don't think so.
Who else might say something? Barry, did you say something there?
I didn't. I mean, I think it could be worse, I've got to say, because there's been so many attempts to do these deals behind closed doors, and the government would love this to happen, to get the content industry and the ISPs to sit in a room and just say, right, we want that blocked, that blocked, that blocked, and the ISPs just do it. That's what they've been pushing for the last year, to stop them having to legislate. And in their defence, BT and TalkTalk have said, no, if you want us to block a website, you have to go to court. And this is what's happened. And yes, I don't think it's a great thing that Newsbin has been blocked. I don't think it's going to make the blindest bit of difference. But at least it went through a court, and at least someone had to present evidence, and it was all done in public. The worst thing will be if they try and do this stuff behind closed doors, then it really is a nightmare.
I mean, it's interesting that none of the stories that I've read today have actually listed the power under which the court issued the ruling. And I can't find one that says this ruling was issued under
whatever act,
anything.
Yeah, see, I feel like I would be a bit, I was going to say this, but I don't want to sound like an idiot, but how can they make that ruling? I don't understand what the precedent is to make that sort of ruling. I don't really get it.
It says it was brought under the Copyrights, Designs and Patents Act.
Right, that's the first time I've actually seen a reference to anything else.
But how far does this go? I mean, you could really abstract it and block Google, because you can find things that infringe copyright on Google. I mean, I know that I'm being sensationalist, but why? I mean, where does it end if you start doing things like this?
The reason I don't put an awful lot on Twitter or on Flickr is because Google will find it and they'll post it. I can't put anything commercial on there because, they are making a business of displaying other people's copyrighted images. There's no Creative Commons filter that goes onto Google in the slightest.
Now, what's the significance of only British Telecom blocking it? Does that mean that, I hadn't really heard about the story prior to this. Why were they involved and not other ISPs? And are other ISPs required to block the site as well?
Because they're the biggest ISP in the UK.
Yeah, no, there are no other ISPs that have been mandated to do it. The ruling is only because it's BT is the largest in the UK.
So I wonder what the rationale is then. Why did they have to block it and no one else does? That seems kind of strange. I think that's why usually the traditional approach, at least on over here, is that people go, lately they're going after the the DNS addresses, or if it's a local company, they go after they try to shut down the company itself.
Well, I mean, the first thing to look at is that this judgment's in the High Court. Now, the High Court is a civil court predominantly. So you've got an issue here where I think you'll find that the Motion Picture Association and a few other people have brought this and pulled BT in as part of a civil case. So this isn't a criminal prosecution against BT for breaking the law. This is a civil request for an injunction, and the injunction's been granted. So that's why there's only loose references to acts where this is applied. And there must be something in the Copyright Protection Act, as you said there, Sarah, which enables the judge to issue civil proclamation.
I think the thing is also that they probably figured, the MPA probably figured that if they take BT to court and win, being the biggest, it covers as many as possible. But also then they've got a legal precedent to go to the other ISPs and say, well, look, if you don't just do it, we'll take you to court as well.
I think some of them will start crying like girls, most definitely.
I don't think BT's too cut up about this, to be honest, because no. They strangle access to news groups anyway for this very reason, because they're renowned for file sharing and, you know, links to downloaded movies. So, to be honest, I don't think your average BT customer was getting much joy out of those forms anyway, because at peak times they're strangled to, you know, 56k on a 24 meg line. And B, it sort of gives BT some cover. I mean, it is an expense for them. The legal team is ever going to put up a fight against this, and they've got another hearing in October, isn't it, to find out about how they actually technically apply this, because it has to. Currently, the movie people want it to go through the same filter that's used to block child pornography images. As I understand, you were saying that. That's a problem for BT.
Yeah, the analogy that was used was the fact that they're saying that the blocking technical information or technical equipment that they've got for blocking is effectively what you're asking them to do is they were set up to block traffic in a Scottish lane, and now they've been asked to block traffic on the freeway, the M1. You know, because it doesn't upscale in that sense. They can't just suddenly do this, which is why we've got this thing in October where they're going back into court to find out how they're going to do it. But they're saying they're not going to appeal the ruling. So there's bound to be some expenditure for them here, though. Whether they've just done a straight way up of, well, it's going to cost us X in court fees and we're probably still going to lose, therefore we might as well take that X amount of money and plow it into the tech. There's a good question in the chat room from Adiman saying, but hang on a minute, isn't there legitimate use for news bins, such as sharing Linux distros, freeware and free stuff? Now, the question I would say is that a legitimate caveat? Or are those just smoke screens that are put up to allow illegal file sharing to take place underneath?
I think on smoke screens.
Yeah, because it's not the only place you can get these things.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I mean, he's talking there about Linux distros. I mean, I wouldn't suggest that you get a Linux distro from anywhere else but a main website, surely.
Yeah, of course not. You never know what's in it.
Eric, what's the feeling, what would be the issue over on the US side? Is this going to follow, do you think? Is there going to be other places? I mean, news groups, there's more than just news bins as far as news groups go, though, isn't there?
I don't know what it's going to be, because as I've been listening to this, I've been wondering, I wonder why I've never heard of this particular type of attack going on before, where people are asking a specific ISP to block up a specific website. Either there's a legal reason they can't do that, maybe based on the First Amendment or something, or there is some business reason that the companies like the MPAA don't go to those means. But I think anytime that you have court mandated blocks of websites, it is a slippery slope, even internationally.
I mean, a lot of the stories are mentioning things where there's legitimate, not legitimate use of the site, but there are other places where kind of what's seen as not legitimate blocking's taken place. Australia wanted to ban any website that didn't have an age verification system against it over a year ago. There was discussions, I'm trying to find the story rampantly here, I can't remember what it was, but they were saying there was an awful lot more going on where, if you look at the thin end of the wedge argument, this is equally going to be then expanded to anything where you've got political domain that you don't like or enjoy. Suddenly I start a website that slags off David Cameron, and all of a sudden unblocked because he chooses to say that that breaches copyright.
Let's look at this logically. There's one ISP has been asked to block one service. So, I mean, the people who do, people who are savvy enough to go and download this stuff on Newsbin, they're going to find alternatives. There's a dozen or more, if you know, hundreds of these sites out there carrying the same kind of content. It's not going to stop it. But now the copyright owners in this case would have spent God knows how many tens of thousands of pounds taking this to the High Court to do something that's not going to make a blind bit of difference. And if they're going to have to do this for every site, for every ISP, it will peter out within months because they can't afford to do it. It will cost them more than the cost of the piracy. So I don't actually, you're right. I mean, it does have concerns over freedom of speech and civil liberties. But the practicalities of the way they're trying to do it is just going to make it unfeasible.
I think the thing is with this, Barry, is that they're not, they really, the guys there at BT, the technical guys, are well aware of the fact that this is going to be easy to get around. They're just going for the casual user who might be looking for to download a movie or whatever, because that's where most of, you know, they're still going to get the odd one that's obviously going to say, oh, well, we'll change ISPs or we use a proxy or whatever to get around it. But I think the thinking is that they'll catch the vast majority.
I don't think it will, because the casual user isn't, it's not, you know, my mum and dad who go on to Newsbin and download a legitimate movies. It's the sort of hardcore file sharers who will be going to those kind of sites and downloading 20, 30, you know, a month. Yeah. And they're the people who are using those sites. It's not the average consumer. The average consumer won't even know what Newsbin is.
I don't mean absolute average consumer. I'm talking about your average file sharer.
Yeah, but the average file share will know the other 25 sites to get it from.
Probably, yeah.
And good point here in the chat room from Saxon saying, but hang on, doesn't BT own all the lines? Is this a block that's actually going to be at the ISP level of the BT business, or is this a block that they're talking about filtering content through the pipe, in which case they're not just hitting BT, they're actually hitting every other BT, every other piggyback provider for the BT lines that are out there?
I was thinking this, but and then I had a couple of thoughts about it. I don't think they own all the lines. I think Virgin have their own lines.
Yeah, Virgin's got its own stuff. They are a separated provider and they use optics up to the box and then the box is copper to the house.
And then I thought that I wouldn't assume that all the traffic goes through BT, so I don't think they would be able to stop, say, O2.
Most of it does, apart from cable, as Ewan said.
I'm not so sure. I think if you look at the most of what you've got, you have to route it through the BT system to get it on their lines.
Yeah, it goes over BT's wires, but it's not BT's network. It's not BT's gateway. So each ISP has its own gateway. This was specifically at BT Retail, which is the ISP level of the company. It's not at wholesale. They won't be able to block every other wholesale ISP.
It'd be interesting to see if they did try and make it at the wholesale level, because that would give them enormous technical issues, I would have thought.
Well, the Digital Economy Act from last year made provisions for this. It said that there will be a process set up, which they're still trying to work out, where there'll be a panel of people that will be able to say every ISP has to block this site, and this site. So that's the more worrying thing, and that came into law last year when they were sorting this half-baked legislation out just before the general election. So this court thing that's going on now is a bit of a sideshow, to some extent, to what's going to come later. And that'd be more interesting to see how that pans out.
Okay, excellent. Japanese quarter results are posted. We've got a 300% increase in cell phone market for Samsung, and the rest of them are in a bit of trouble, it would seem. Fujitsu lost 20.4 billion yen, which that's about $35, isn't it? Something like that.
£1.50.
If you don't want to listen, stuff off. I'll do it myself. 470 million yen loss for Toshiba made, a profit, and then Sharp lost 3.5 billion yen, and Sony also lost a bit. I mean, is this just general recession, or are people switching off from tech and going for other types of tech?
470 million yen, you said. That's 3.6 billion quid.
That's enough then.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah, you'll take that. That's a profit for Toshiba, but everyone else seems to be losing money. Is this the halo effect of Apple, that people want Apple hardware, or is this just the fact that you know, it's a recession and we're looking at companies going backwards?
I mean, I'm a fanboy, so I would say that it's Apple that's doing it. But the numbers don't lie. In the same vein, Apple's market, PC market's growing, and their competitors tend to not.
But their market share doesn't seem to be growing as proportionately as their bank balances. I mean, you're talking about a company that's gone from $40 billion 18 months ago to $75 billion, sat in the bank doing nothing, and yet their market share has increased, but it hasn't increased exponentially. You're not talking about 15% increase, 5% increases in the PC market or the laptop market. You're talking about 5% increases.
The personal market is so much smaller than the enterprise market. And the enterprise market hangs on to equipment for a longer period of time. So the growth, you know, would probably be in the personal market anyway.
The other thing is Apple's big in America. I mean, it's 10%, just got over 10% of the market in America. Over in Europe, it's tiny. It's not even in the top five over here. I think it's slightly bigger in Asia again, but it's mainly America where its base is. The rest of the world is relatively small in terms of Mac alone.
Yeah, because Apple made a big hoo-ha on the earnings call saying that they'd had growth in Europe, because typically they haven't in the past.
Yeah,
I suspect it's
not even in the top five.
Eric, go ahead.
I suspect it's not due to any kind of an Apple halo effect, because looking at these companies, Toshiba, Sharp, Fujitsu, Sony, with the possible exception of Sony, I don't really think any of these companies compete directly with any Apple products. And maybe it's one thing to say that iPads are taking off, so people may be spending their money in fewer areas. But I don't think it's, we can make the comparison that people are choosing iPads over the tablets offered by any of these other companies, because it's a brand new market, and they just don't have a competitive product in it yet.
Well,
and I don't think that's what would cause their overall lapse in profits. I think probably it is due more to a overall global economic downturn. Because looking at these names, I think isn't the bulk of what these companies make HDTVs, you know, large screen panels. And I would imagine that the sales of those would be much lower in this recession. I don't look at those companies and see many consumer electronics or computers or PCs along the lines that Apple does.
Well, Toshiba's pretty good in the laptop market, and it's just got its new tablet out, hasn't it? And it's got a Toughbook-y type tablet out too. I would say the thing that binds them all together is the TV and home entertainment market. Fujitsu aren't doing anything with cameras, which Sony are. Toshiba aren't doing anything with cameras, which Sony are. Sharp is nearly all TVs and home entertainment market, which you know, with the death of Blu-ray and increase in downloading, that would shove Sharp out straight away and stand them out typically.
Yeah, and I think Fujitsu, do they have any branded products for sale to consumers over in the UK? Because I think here they're pretty much a component manufacturer. I've seen their names on things like hard drives, but not on like a TV set or a computer you can buy in a store.
They sell a laptop in conjunction with Siemens, most definitely. It's the new version of it's not bad. The old version was a complete dog. And I know because I've got one, because someone gave me one. But it's Fujitsu do a huge amount in management of ISP data, don't they?
Hmm.
That's their big growth business. They're all about managing data flow and nodes and that kind of stuff of the big ISPs around the country. I know Virgin's a huge contract of theirs.
Interesting. Maybe are they the Cisco of Europe?
If that's what Cisco do in the States, then yes.
Yeah.
They're all about ISP management, data management, pipe management.
Yeah, I think over here, Cisco dominates that.
From what I understand of the market, and this is me talking off the top of my head, which is equally comparable to me talking completely out of my arse. As far as I'm aware, Fujitsu, when it comes down to the actual blocking that BT is talking about doing from the previous story, the chances are it's Fujitsu that will be doing it, not BT themselves. I think it's all subbed out to them. I don't know that for sure, but that's what I think. Anyone know for sure?
No.
Nope.
I'm not even going to pretend.
Okay. I must be right then. No one disagreed.
Yeah. I like that logic. Yeah.
Fujitsu Siemens is pretty big in corporate computers, both laptops and desktops, said Robert in the chat room. Carl's only just got here, so he's obviously been down the pub drinking. Never mind. And huge in the UAE. Everywhere I go, it's all iPads and iPhones, says Saxon. That's why we see a lot of companies that still run PCs with Windows XP because of the delay, I guess, in upgrade and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. Have we got any cool thingies? Mike, do you want to start us off?
No.
Okay. Eric, do you want to start us off?
Come back to me.
No. Sarah, did you bring anything?
Well, I came up with something, yeah.
Hey!
Well, when you said about books, I thought there's, and it has to be a tech book, I thought there's one book I've got to talk about, and I've never done it before, so I had it some time ago, and I thought it is really good. It's all about, it's going to be boring for some of you guys. It's a very thin O'Reilly book, but it is the best book I've ever come across on security. And it's called Essential PHP Security. Now, it's about PHP security, but if you know PHP and other languages, the principles in here you can easily apply to any other web language. So ASP, ASP.NET, it covers things like cross-site scripting and a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, it's a very thin volume, as I say, but what's in here is absolutely pure gold dust.
I hear they're thinking of making it into a TV miniseries. And from what I understand, even though they haven't gone into production yet, they're optioning series two.
Yeah, I'm securing the options for that.
Yeah, that's good. Sarah, look on the bright side, mate. You're the only one that picked anything.
I've got something.
If you're into PHP...
Yeah, as I say, it doesn't just...
That must be PHP porn.
Yeah, it probably is. there you go, again.
I'm taking the mickey here, but actually... If you're into sysadmin stuff, then that must be goldust for you.
It is.
Is it, and it actually talks a lot of common sense as well, or is it all theory?
It's all... it's got practical examples, and it is about 100... It's only 110 pages, which for an O'Reilly book is actually quite a slim volume, but it's... When I read it the first time, and I did read... That was a reference book. I actually read it cover to cover just to make sure I'd got a handle on everything... in there. It took me ages to read each chapter because I was taking it in. I tend to read
I was going
to
say, did you sleep in between pages or was that...
No, I actually read it on the bus, believe it or not.
110 pages on a bus?
No, not in one chapter.
Oh, God.
I bet you got some funny looks, Sarah, reading that in public.
Yeah, probably did, but I don't care.
And you'll be pleased to hear as well, if you go to Amazon, there's a whole series of books on PHP by it that look riveting, including the PHP cookbook.
Yep.
Which has got the foreword by Jamie Oliver.
Good value, and put that one in as well. That's actually quite good.
How many of these books have you got, mate?
I've got a whole shelf of them.
I'm going to send you a copy of this month's Vogue. Give you something else to read in the bus. £11.13 from Amazon.
Yep, there's a Kindle version as well. There's that one.
I was going to say turn your camera around and show us the bookshelf, but don't.
No, okay. No, that would just be weird. So then all on PHP, but there's stuff on Java, CSS, Excel VBA, XML, loads of stuff. And I do go through them regularly and chuck some older ones out, so...
I've got to say, after that, I feel like I'm driven to pick a porn site or something, just to kind of ballast it out there.
Yeah, just to lighten it a bit, yeah.
Barry, did you come up with anything? I know we kind of threw it on you at the last minute a bit, but have you got anything that's cool out there?
Well, the very thing you're viewing me on now is a MacBook Air 13-inch, the latest Sunny Bridges version, and it is absolutely fantastic. The review's going on the website tomorrow, but, I mean, I'm not a big Mac fan, to say the least, and this thing has been in my bag all week, replacing my Dell laptop, because it is absolutely superb.
And is it a loaner unit? Have you got to give it back?
Yeah, afraid so.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a wrench.
Is it going to be £1,000 wrench?
Well, yeah, that may require some domestic negotiation, but we've got the 1300 quid model here. So this is the one with the 256 gig SSD, and so it's pretty much the top one you can buy off the Mac store. You can spec a Core i7 model that goes a little bit faster for I think about 300 quid more. But I mean, this thing, Core i5, the turbo boost up to 2.7 gig. I've not waited for a single thing this week. And you just don't notice the difference until you actually bring something like this home. And I was playing on the iPlayer the night before last. And usually I'm waiting sort of 10 seconds for a HD iPlayer thing to start. And I always thought that was just the broadband connection. And it's not. It was just the processing speed. Because this thing just absolutely cut through it. Within, you know, 2 seconds, I was watching the HD streams. So it's a lovely, lovely, fast piece of kit.
Right. Thoroughly recommended at £1,300 of someone else's money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
At £1,300 as well, you could be single next week. Is that what you're saying?
It would cost me a lot more than £1,300 if I was single with the missus and two kids.
There you go.
Just keep my head down.
There you go, girls. Barry's back on the market in 7 days' time. Mike, have you got some?
I have. I'm going to pick Byword, which is a writing app available from the Mac App Store. I'm currently trying to teach myself Markdown, which is a language writing for the web. But Byword's really great for Markdown. It has great Markdown support. You can export any Markdown written to HTML, which I quite like, for when I'm coding some posts for all the podcasts. But what Byword is also a regular, pretty well advanced normal text editor, and it has some focus modes which are pretty cool, which keep you focused on only the paragraph that you're written in, and it fades everything else out around it. It's been updated for Lion, and it has versioning, autosave, and full screen natively integrated into the application. It's £7 on the Mac App Store and is well worth a look.
Excellent. £7 seems a bit pricey, if you don't mind me saying.
Worth it.
Okay, yeah. Mate. Thorough recommendation from Mike.
Yeah.
Eric, what have you got for us? Still nothing?
I've got nothing.
Okay, mate. Right.
Nothing at all.
My pick is an audiobook, and I've been listening to it all week, Chartthrob, by Ben Elton. And it's all to do with kind of like the X Factory, pop idol-y, American Idol kind of phenomenon. It's not a brand new book by any stretch of the imagination, but I've actually finally got round to listening to it, even though I bought it about 18 months ago. And it's bloody hilarious. I actually started driving slower today so I could listen to more of the book on the way home from Southampton.
It's a mark of a good book.
Yeah. I looked down and noticed my speed was 50 on the motorway, and that's when everyone was hurtling past me. So I can't recommend it highly enough. Lots and lots of different prices, whether you want it on hardback or whether you want it on download. But I got mine from Audible, and I got it as part of my free pick, so I couldn't tell you how much it cost. But it's unabridged if you want to get it in places, and it's absolutely brilliant. Chartthrob by Ben Elton. There you go. If you're not if you're in the US and you've never heard of Ben Elton, he's a comedy writer over here that did Blackadder, and did he write on The Young Ones?
Yeah, he also wrote We Will Rock You.
Yeah, and he did the one that Maybe Baby, didn't he, that was turned into a Hugh Laurie film?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Hugh Laurie anyway. There you go. Ben Elton, totally good. One day, Eric Lanigan's going to have a pick that he doesn't find at the last minute before we do this show.
One day. We can hope.
A couple of things to say before we disappear. The first one is an unashamed plug for our store. We've got some shirts on offer that you can buy. If you go to bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk, you can get them. Alternatively, you can go to our website and scroll down. There's a banner that you can click that will take you straight to the shop. There's a whole pile of slogans and logos and that kind of stuff. Buy yourself a t-shirt, or buy yourself a mug, or buy yourself any other kind of regalia that's associated with the network. We've set this up just this week, but the reason that we've done it is people keep saying that they want to give a donation to us, and I'm not good with people just giving us money. I'd rather people got something for it. So this is an idea for you to buy something, and we get something from the sales that you give. So if you buy a shirt from this place, then they will give us money as a commission on the design. And every time you buy a shirt, we get some money that goes towards equipment for the network and that kind of stuff. Is there a pipe smoker of the year design, says Saxon in the chat room? No, not yet, but there will be tomorrow. If you've got something that you want on your shirt, then let me know. Send me an email or send me a tweet and I'll make it up. We've had two people this week have requested slogans, and they've been added to the shirts as we've done it within a couple of minutes. It's fairly easy for me to do. So let me know if you've got a typical slogan that's associated with Bagel Tech, and I'll put it in there. The last word as well, of course, goes to our sponsors, UK2.net, who are our bandwidth providers and the people that pick up all the charges for everything we do on the net. I mean, they're phenomenal for us. We can't thank them enough. They've picked up 4 terabytes of data last month. That's just audio alone. We don't do any video yet with them. They're going to have an apoplectic fit when we actually get to do video, I think. If you want domains, web hosting, e-commerce, VPS servers, co-location services, that kind of stuff, give UK2 a check out, see what their prices are like. But if you do, here's the big thing. When you go there, go to our website first, bageltechnews.com, scroll down and go to the UK2 logo and click that. There's a tracking link on that, so they'll know that we've sent you. Even if you just sign into your account, you can still use that tracking link. They're very happy. They want to know that you're a returning customer from Bageltech. When you go and find something that you want to buy, you look at the price, but bear in mind that if you're buying it using our link through, when you get to your shopping cart at the end, there'll be a coupon code available. Put in the word Bageltech, all one word, and 15% will come off your total cart. And you can do that as many times as you like. It's not just your first purchase. Any purchases that you make from UK2, use Bageltech as the offer code. You get 15% off. Simple as that. And do be careful, because we've had 3 calls from them now that have said, do you realise that a lot of people are coming through from your website and they're not using the offer code? They want you to take the 15%. For God's sake, people, use the offer code for Bageltech, and it will do you the power of good. Next month as well, we've got Wirecast there that's showing up on the video feed. We're doing another competition next month on Wirecast where we're giving away a whole copy of Wirecast, $500 worth of software. So stay tuned for that next month. UK2, though, thank you very much. We'd be lost without you. Absolutely. Just to finish off then, Mike, where can we get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, and at thepodcastingproject.com to links to all the other stuff that I do.
And this has got to be a first, mate, because this is the first time that we've ever managed to do this podcast in under an hour.
Yeah, thank you.
We normally crap around with the audio for at least an hour before we start even recording. So there you go, mate. You can get on with all your editing.
Thank you.
I'd like to say I'm considerate, but I'm not. Just happened that way.
It was just chance.
Barry, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Any good news agent, please. But you can also get us on the website.
Is that a proposition?
UK, or we've got a podcast ourselves on iTunes as well. So you can get us pretty much anywhere.
Please buy PC Pro Magazine, because every sale means that Barry doesn't get the crap beaten out of him by his wife for not bringing home the beans when he buys a new MacBook Air. That's kind of the subtle absolutely. Message there. Yeah, absolutely. And it looks new now as well. New design. Do bear that in mind. Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
I'm sorry. I was just looking at the T-shirts on the shirt site.
You can. It's a woman who said, I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I was shopping.
Yeah, I was.
Break the stereotype, girl. Break the stereotype. Well, you already have by the PHP book.
Bageltech big with just the logo on. You've got the Mac and the photo, but I couldn't find the Big Show one.
A Big Show with just logo. I think there is one. I'll have a look in a minute and send you the link. All right.
You can go hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Gotcha. I thought you were buying Linux Girl anyway.
Yeah, I will do, but I quite like one with just the Bageltech big logo on as well.
Okie doke. And finally, Eric, what would you like on your T-shirt, mate?
I would like it to say, do you have any cool thingies? And I would say, nope.
Yeah, you could have a cool thingy on the front and nope on the back. There
we go. But you could also have ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N.
And attacking the new studios within the next couple of weeks, hopefully.
Yes, indeed.
And Tech Talk Back will be back.
It'll be back.
Now, we said last week, technologically, can you do it from your place? And you said, yeah, we definitely can. But you haven't. Why not?
Good question. I think it's because I was expecting to go in earlier this week and start training on the new equipment and figuring out where I'm going to be and how to do it and all. And I was watching and just seeing they're still working really hard just to get the basic essential shows, fault free.
I just wondered if it was a healthy dose of lazy bastard.
A little bit of that towards as Thursday neared. I was a little bit just like, well, I'll catch up on some sleep.
Have you put £10 on this week?
Sorry, what?
Have you put £10 on this week because you haven't had to go?
Oh, 20. Go. 20, just sit around just eating.
Good man. We'll be back again tomorrow morning with the Bageltech News Show. We're sorry we missed Wednesday, but I was drunk on Tuesday night with Will Green. But that won't happen much, honest. We'll do the Daily Show in the morning. Then we've got the Max Show at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Don't forget to be there. It should be great. And then finally, we've got the Photo Show at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And we've got loads of questions, and we've got Chris Forsman on from Ars Technica. He's on doing a whole pile of stuff with us. So it should be good fun. Alex Fox and Carl Swagger will be there, and it'll be the usual bunch. See you again next week. Hope you can join us. Thanks for listening.